From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This November, the people of Colorado will do more than cast a vote for president. They will also decide whether or not to change the way their state allocates its Electoral College votes. For almost as long as there has been an Electoral College system in the United States, some voters have been trying to abolish it. Designed to ensure that more populous states don't dominate presidential elections, critics argue that the system unfairly usurps the voice of the individual voter. When Al Gore won the popular vote in 2000 and George Bush won the election, the first time that had happened since 1888, it brought significant new life to an old debate. If Colorado succeeds in switching to a proportional system of divvying up its Electoral College votes, it could swing this year's election and spark a chain reaction in other states. Tonight on Point, America's difficult marriage to the Electoral College and Colorado's big new challenge to the system. Is it time for one man, one woman vote and the Electoral College be damned? Or has this quirky old system brought a certain stability to American presidential politics? Does it keep small states from being ignored? Does it frustrate the popular will? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Denver, Colorado, is State Senator Ron Tupa, Outreach Director for the state's Amendment 36 initiative that would change the way that state allocates its Electoral College votes. We'll hear in a moment from Colorado Governor Bill Owens, an opponent of that change. But first to you, Ron Tupa, why the push in Colorado for reform?
Well, good evening, Tom. Thanks for having me on your show.
Great to have you.
Amendment 36, it's a nonpartisan citizens initiative. It would change the way the state of Colorado allocates our electors. It would scrap the winner-take-all system and replace it with a proportional system that's based on the popular vote. Colorado is one of 48 states that has the winner-take-all system, and we don't feel that it fairly or accurately reflects the will of the vote in Colorado.
It's worked, been used anyway in the United States for a very long time. What's pushing Colorado to move on this front now?
Well, there have actually been hundreds of attempts to change the Electoral College, as I think you mentioned in your opening.
Mm-hmm.
And every state can do their own thing. After the 2000 election, I actually introduced legislation in the state Senate and the state legislature to change the way that we allocated electors to reflect a system similar to Maine and Nebraska. So I thought we could at least change the winner-take-all system and get it somewhat more democratic. What this citizens initiative does goes even further. It's even more progressive, more little-d democratic. It would be the most accurate way that you could count votes for president.
So tell us exactly how it would work. The voters would come out in Colorado on November 2nd. They'd cast their vote, and instead of the candidate with the greater number taking all, what is it this year, nine?
There's nine votes now.
Votes. You would divide them up. So it might be, you know, four for one candidate, three for the other, or something like that. It's a pretty close race there.
Right. If the poll numbers hold up now, you'd likely see a 5-4 split, but you could also envision a 6-3 split. So instead of the candidate that gets a simple plurality, you don't even have to have a majority, just one vote more than the next guy.
Right.
You'd scrap that system where they would take everything and you would base it more on the popular vote, which is the closest you can have for the reflection of how the people voted.
Now, the initiative will be on the ballot on the same day that the presidential candidates are on the ballot. If people in Colorado vote in favor of this reform, would it affect this year's election, right?
Right. It takes place simultaneously. So when the public is voting on this amendment, if it passes, it will affect this presidential election, and it's pretty clear it says that right in the title, so we don't think people are going to get confused.
And given projections of how close this could possibly be, Colorado could end up deciding it by its reforms of the electoral allocation this year.
Well, I suppose it
it's a hypothetical anyway.
Sure, and it could go either way. I've seen some scenarios where if you had something similar to 2000 with the same results, you might actually get a tie in the Electoral College.
Who's backing this? I've seen reporting saying that there's $1 million in here from a rich Californian who's connected to George Soros, who is connected to the Democratic Party. Is this a Democratic Party initiative?
No, this is a nonpartisan citizens initiative. The People's Choice for President is the foundation that put the seed money together to place this on the ballot. But it has a lot of support, grassroots support here within the state. It's backed by, for instance, the League of Women Voters and Common Cause and many other organizations throughout the state.
And, Ron, if Colorado should pass this initiative, can you imagine other states across the country doing that? The view has always been that a constitutional amendment is pretty well impossible because small states are likely to be against it. But might this turn into a kind of prairie fire, which would remake the Electoral College process from the ground up?
Well, we hope so, especially if it passes. Remember, after the 2000 election, many states looked at changing the way that they allocated their electors. Colorado was just one of dozens that did this. But I think you'll see if we have a close vote, and certainly if we have another situation where the popular vote winner loses in the Electoral College, the likelihood of a constitutional amendment coming out of it is much greater.
Ron Tupa, thanks for being with us tonight, and we will be watching with great attention to how it unfolds on November 2nd.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Ron Tupa, Colorado State Senator and Outreach Director on Amendment 36. We are joined now from Denver by the Governor of Colorado, second-term Republican Bill Owens. Governor Owens, thanks for joining us tonight.
How are you this evening?
We're doing great. We're very interested in what you've got going on out there. In the latest polls, I see kind of neck and neck between Bush and Kerry. Well, I'm not sure if this is the very latest, but in August anyway. And at the same time, you've got this initiative, which appears to have substantial support for changing the way you allocate your electoral votes. What's your view on this initiative, Governor?
Well, I take it from two perspectives. First of all, I see this year in terms of the partisan makeup of those on the other side of this initiative that it is an attempt to change this state and the probable outcome of 9 electoral votes for President Bush to a 5-4 electoral vote victory for the president.
You're not saying this is a vote for the ages, but as something for this particular contest this year.
I say there's two parts to it. And the first part is that it is very clearly being done very specifically in this state for this election for a very partisan purpose. And then secondly, I will go through the arguments on why I would think this is bad for Colorado long term as well. The gentleman who's financing this is a former Berkeley professor, Dr. Jorge de Alva. He now lives in Brazil. We've had difficulty actually reaching him, but he is an associate of George Soros. He's invested at least $1 million so far in terms of what the other side of this issue has publicly acknowledged in this effort. What I would ask is, why isn't he trying to do this in California? California has the initiative. California has, I think, 55 electoral votes. Were he to do this there this year, President Bush would likely garner 23, 24 of those votes. But he's chosen Colorado. They've hired a gentleman who helped run the Howard Dean campaign to run this initiative. My good friend Senator Tupa is a very active Democrat from Boulder. Finally, their attorney is a Democratic activist as well. They are trying to do this in a way where they don't believe they can win this state in a head-to-head Bush versus Kerry. So they're trying to use our initiative process to take most of those votes anyway. So I do have a problem with it tactically this year in terms of who's behind it and what they're doing it for.
So we've got that, Governor. At the same time, you know, the one man, one woman, one vote appeal is pretty strong. We're looking here at polls that suggest maybe 60% of Colorado voters are for this. To what do you attribute the popular apparent popular support?
Well, Tom, because it sounds so fair. It if you poll on a question where there hasn't been much yet public discussion, who could be against one person, one vote? Who could be against the fact that every vote should count? The fact of the matter is the Denver Post is against it, the Rocky Mountain News is against it. In fact, I believe all of the major newspapers which have editorialized in Colorado, including the Boulder paper, the Pueblo paper, are against it for this reason. If Colorado, alone among the 50 states, chooses to go to a proportional vote, it means that when we have water disputes with neighboring states, when we have a base closing situation where it's a military base in Colorado compared to one perhaps in Arizona, when we have disputes regarding highway funding, all things being equal, I think any administration is going to perhaps look to the fact that one state doesn't have, one state has one electoral vote, and that's what we would in essence have.
The margin between, let's say, if it were 5-4, it would be that one vote for one candidate or another. So your clout would be diminished by this change.
Our clout would be significantly diminished. Wyoming, which has the fewest in the country, has three. We would in essence have one. And that's why all of the major newspapers in the state are opposed to this initiative, in addition to the practical issues of timing and who's backing it this particular year.
What's your sense of how it's running right now, Governor Owens?
I think right now it probably is ahead, but again, I think the opinions of these newspapers, we haven't yet begun our effort, and we will do so shortly. I think we're going to be able to defeat this because it just isn't in Colorado's best interest. Even if you agree with proportional voting, let's do it with all the states at the same time rather than us, in essence, unilaterally disarming first.
Well, it's quite a revolution that your state is toying with out there. We thank you for describing
Thanks,
it to
Tom.
Us and joining us tonight.
I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Governor Bill Owens, governor of Colorado, a second-term Republican there. We're joined now from Washington by John Harwood, political editor for The Wall Street Journal. John R. Harwood, great to have you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Great to be here.
You've done some great reporting on what's going on in Colorado and its potential ramifications across the country. John, just take us through the basics here. Everybody thought the Electoral College was more or less immutable because it would require, we sort of thought, a constitutional amendment at the federal level to change it. Now we see a challenge at the state level in Colorado that you write could turn into a kind of chain reaction across the country that would be a real challenge to this long, long-standing way of choosing the president.
This is one of the most fascinating developments of the 2004 campaign. You know, everybody talked about changing the Electoral College after 2000. Hillary Clinton and other Democrats in the Congress introduced legislation to try to change it, get the ball rolling on a constitutional amendment. But constitutional amendments are really, really hard to do. And it has not happened nearly as much, that is, changes to the system at the state level, as one would have thought. We had Maine in 1969 go to proportional representation, Nebraska in 1992, slightly different system than they're now considering in Colorado. But what you have is Democrats making a tactical strike here, recognizing an opportunity where they could win a few electoral votes that they probably weren't going to get. And they laid low for much of the year. They mounted a big petition drive. They got it on the ballot. And they've got a decent chance of prevailing. If that happens, I think what you're going to see is Republicans making copycat moves. Maybe they go after California or Oregon or Washington or states like that.
Democratic bastions.
Exactly. Places where Democrats have a strong advantage, where they could pick up large chunks of electoral votes very quickly if they had proportional voting.
That is, peeling them away from the winner-take-all formula that there is now. The Democrats would have to share them with Republicans if the Colorado format won there and was repeated.
Exactly. And the trick is, how do you get it enacted? You got to change state law. In a lot of state capitals, like California, for example, you've got a Republican governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, but Democrats in a very strong position in the legislature. Can't get much done that way. However, they do have a very active and prominent initiative and referendum process, so they can try to get something on the ballot just as Democrats got it on the ballot in Colorado.
2000 really got people's attention when the popular vote went to Al Gore and the election went to George Bush. Do you feel the country primed to reexamine the Electoral College in a serious way right now, John?
I think in theory the country is primed for that. 2000 was only the fourth time in our history that the popular vote loser became the president. But it is so difficult to get something done in terms of a constitutional amendment that I think it is one of those things that if you take a poll, most people will be for it. But it's not likely to develop the momentum, the juice, if you will, in public opinion to really make it happen. So it's probably going to be an editorial page kind of cause, a political science cause, but not something that is actually on a national basis translated into law.
But if it comes up at the state level in Colorado, as you say, we could see copycats right across the country. John Harwood, stand by. We're talking this hour about America's difficult marriage to the Electoral College and Colorado's big new challenge to the whole system. Is it time for one man, one vote, and the Electoral College be damned? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's difficult marriage to the Electoral College and Colorado's big new challenge to the whole system. We just heard from the governor of Colorado about what's brewing out there. You can join the conversation tonight. Is it time to jettison the Electoral College, or has this quirky old system brought a certain stability over time to American presidential politics? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from Washington by John Harwood, political editor for The Wall Street Journal. I'm joined now from Durham, North Carolina, by Michael Munger. He's chairman of the Political Science Department at Duke University and author of Analyzing Policy, Choices, Conflicts, and Practices. Good evening and welcome, Michael Munger.
Hey, I'm glad to be on the show, and I want to give a Duke welcome to John.
Okay,
hey there.
There
you go. Devil.
Hold down these Blue Devils. They'll take over everything.
And with me in the studio tonight, Alan Natapoff. He is research physicist in the Department of Aeronautics and Astronautics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. His ideas on Electoral College reform were the topic of a September 15th article in Business Week online. Yes, we brought in an astrophysicist to talk about this. It's just that complicated, but Alan Natapoff, we're very glad to have you. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Michael Munger, first to you. You're an active critic of the Electoral College. You're an active supporter of the Colorado initiative to turn it into a proportional system there. Why?
Well, I'm in many ways a supporter of the Electoral College. I think the fact that it is a compact among the states and gives disproportionate power to small states in some ways is a good idea. The part of it that I object to is the winner-take-all provision. What it means is that all you have to do is concentrate on getting small majorities in a few large states, and you can ignore all the small states. Furthermore, once a state is decided, it gets no attention at all. California and Texas aren't going to get any attention from the presidential campaigns because they're already decided.
So what are you suggesting then, that Colorado's got just the right idea? Use the college, but direct your electoral votes to it in a proportional manner instead of winner-take-all.
Yes, but the objection that Governor Owens made is right. It's very difficult for Colorado to go first. On the other hand, that's the sort of leadership that might make a difference. I think a switch to a proportional system would mean that wouldn't have so much riding on just a few votes. So the alternative systems... the big problem I think that we're going to have is, as we saw in Florida, if it's close, it raises questions of fraud. It actually calls into question the integrity of the electoral system. If just a few thousand votes can change the outcome for the state and the presidential election...
And shift all the electoral college votes of that state.
Then we're going to get either perception of or actual instances of corruption, and it's going to make people suspicious about every county and every precinct. We're going to have endless calls for recounts, and it's going to be a constitutional crisis.
But you're suggesting, as I hear you, just the opposite, Michael Munger, of what Governor Owens was saying. You're saying that under the current system, smaller states get ignored because big states with all their electoral college votes attract so much attention. He's saying just the opposite. If we don't have the leverage of winner-take-all, where you've really got to woo us to get the whole batch of votes, then we lose our leverage.
Well, but the same thing would be true of California. California would be 32 to 31 or something like that. So they would have the same problem of difference. The Electoral College has the effect, because you get the number of electors where you have two senators plus the number of representatives. Mm-hmm. It offsets the small state disadvantage. So a single vote in Wyoming counts as much as three or five votes in California. It doesn't offset completely the difference. But
you mean of individual votes? In other words, the weight of a Wyoming voter adds up to that of three or four Californians, let's say, or New Yorkers.
Yeah. Yes, quite a few more. So it doesn't mean that Wyoming is going to determine the outcome. It just counts three or four more times. The problem with comparing these probabilities, and I think Alan may take exception to this, but the problem with these probabilities, even you say voter has a higher probability of influencing the outcome, it's tantamount to saying that a tall person is more likely than a short person to bump his head on the moon.
All right. That seems like a good intro for an astrophysicist. Alan Natapoff, let's turn to you on that. First of all, what is an astrophysicist doing all wrapped up in the Electoral College? You've been thinking and writing about this for years. What brought you to it?
The movement to adopt, to change the Electoral College, to destroy it, to take it, to adopt a raw voting system.
You know, a lot of Americans look at it and say, gosh, that looks arcane. Can't we do something better? And, of course, in 2000, many people were tearing their hair out. Why do you defend this system so ardently?
It's the best one we have. We should do better. We should count the votes vote by vote in every state, not merely divide them proportionally. And it should all go to the winner so that you can change the national result by changing your state result. Everybody knows that one vote is not going to make a difference in 100 million, but it might tip your state. If we put everybody into the one large block, then nobody will have any impact on the national election.
No,
at all.
You're saying if we did away perhaps with the Electoral College entirely and just had a popular vote in the United States, and
yes,
at the end we tallied it all up, X million for one candidate, X million for another, or a third.
Yes.
And there was the outcome.
That's right.
But what if Colorado's proposing something different? They're still saying, we're going to offer up our electoral votes. We're just going to divvy them up proportionally.
I know.
Are you for it?
Against. Deeply.
Why?
Individual votes would make no difference nationally. As the governor said, one vote could make no difference. Colorado will make no difference. It'll have one-third the net number of votes of Wyoming and probably one-tenth of the power per vote that a vote in Wyoming would have.
Now, take us into your thinking there. Why would it make no difference if we're going to add up all the votes and see who the winner is in Colorado? It looks to me like it makes a difference.
But all the votes in Colorado will cancel each other. In any close state, the votes, as several people have said, will cancel each other, make no net national
because
difference.
The margin, let's say it's if they have 9 electoral votes there.
Yes.
If the vote is close, so it comes out 5 electoral votes for one candidate, 4 for the other.
Right.
There's only a 1 electoral vote margin, so that's really all it's offering to the contest.
Exactly. And that's why no state does it now. And that's why no state should do it, because the individuals are protected by having their state have a national result.
But what about the 2000 election? People looked at that and said, my gosh, this is a crime against democracy. We've got the popular vote for one candidate, and the other one's going into the White House. It doesn't look right.
It was a glorious triumph of democracy. Small numbers of votes changed the outcome. And everybody stood up and said, if I had known votes were so important, I would have voted. No one in America thinks that his vote counts. That's because we don't understand the great power that the Electoral College gives individual votes. And we will never make that mistake again since Florida. But that's exactly why we should keep the Electoral College. But we should count the votes in every state, not give the state a fixed number of votes, not 25 to Florida. We should give 6,500,000, because 500,000 are the equivalent of the 2 senatorial votes.
You mean the number of voters who turned out, in other words?
Exactly. Yes, the precise number. And there'll be one more vote if you turn out and one less if you don't.
So you're saying incent the voters to turn out as
yes,
a new twist on the Electoral College.
That is what every voting system is for. Most voters in the United States don't have any impact. In Texas, California, New York, and New York, not in Florida, but in most states, your vote will not make any difference.
Because they're all sewed up, essentially, in one party's camp.
That's right. And what I want is to have voters in those states have the capacity to cast a blank ballot, so that they will not count for the winner if they disapprove of the winner.
But they'll make their state's vote count overall.
They will.
John Harwood, jump in here with us. Is you're hearing an argument play out here over the Electoral College? Is this the sort of the argument you hear nationally between doubters and believers?
Not exactly. I personally find it hard to believe that the difference between going from the Electoral College sort of state unit system we have now to a national system or a proportional system would dramatically change people's propensity to vote or the way they think about their vote. Most people, it seems to me, rationally in most states know that there's a heck of a lot of people voting and that their vote is not likely to make a difference in the outcome. I have a hard time thinking that would be much different if we were thrown into a national pool. I think people vote because they think it's their responsibility to vote. A lot of people don't, of course. Only about half the country that's eligible turns out to vote in presidential elections. Mm-hmm. But I would be surprised if you had people all of a sudden saying, my vote counts a lot less than they think it counts right now.
I want to hear from our callers on this. A lot of them want to join the conversation. John is calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Sure.
I actually had some of my thinking changed as I was listening to the gentleman who's an astrophysicist there.
I came into
the argument thinking that the Electoral College is actually sort of an anachronism, and I don't think it's brought stability to the system as much as it's brought stagnation. And I think that, in fact, the notion of one man or one woman, one vote is something that is more closely allied to the values that I think we have around voting. And I think that Americans do need to be incented to vote because I think the integrity of the system has been in question, at least in the mind of most of us, and probably proven so in the last election over the past few years.
So are you coming down for the status quo or saying, hey, Colorado, you've got a good idea, split up your Electoral College votes proportional to the popular vote within your state?
I would go so far as to say that, yes, I think that not only does Colorado have a good idea, I think that's something that's really part of a national conversation that we have to have around whether the Electoral College has any validity in the 21st century. And I have a question.
Yeah.
And that question is, do you know if the electors are in fact legally bound to vote according to what the electoral vote is?
Well, that's a good question. We'll pick it up. I'm looking at a news report here from South Charleston, where the mayor, Richie Robb, this is a September 8th report. It says, said today he may vote against George W. Bush in the Electoral College, even if the president carries West Virginia's popular vote. He's a Republican. And he says he may go against it. Michael Munger, what are the requirements of what do you call them? Those who carry the electoral votes?
Well, they're the electors.
Electors,
members,
yes,
of the Electoral College are electors, and we think of them as being faceless because they are unknown. Their identities are not announced in advance. The kind of elector the caller is talking about is a faithless elector. So faithless electors are those who, out of faith, vote for someone else. It's perfectly legal. It would be frowned upon. You're asked
even if his state, let's say West Virginia in this case, votes for a majority for Bush, he can go and give his vote to Kerry?
He actually could vote for you, Tom, and I think maybe that we should start a campaign for that.
Unlikely.
He can vote for anyone that he feels like.
Let me ask you this, Michael Munger. What was the founder's intention with this? We're hearing a lot about giving more power to smaller states. I guess in those days it would have been the East Coast states that were already long settled. Maybe the states further west were afraid that they wouldn't have enough sway in the presidential elections. They didn't have many inhabitants.
Well, almost the eastern states were all that we had. I think there's two things we should remember about the origin of the Electoral College. The first is that it was expected never to determine the outcome. The founders thought that all of the elections would be determined by the House of Representatives because if you have six or seven candidates, nobody's going to get a majority in the Electoral College.
So they didn't foresee our big two-party divide that we've got today.
No. In fact, a lot of them were actively opposed to the idea of parties. So there was no clue that the Electoral College was going to be anything other than a curiosity. And it was a way of deciding the election if there was a huge majority in favor of one out of seven candidates, but it was unlikely. Second thing is that they wanted to keep the electorate from acting on wild impulses and voting for demagogues. So at first, a lot of states used the state legislatures to choose the electors. There was no pretense, really, or even argument for the popular selection of the president, and that's why electors are not obliged to vote the way that the citizens tell mm-hmm. them to. So it's a way of actually subverting democracy. It was the direct intention of it was to prevent demagoguery.
So Alan,
I think that's a good point.
Yes, John.
One of the things we have to keep in mind is that if you accept the Electoral College as an organization or a system that has continuing relevance, you also have to accept the basic idea that came with it, which was that the people couldn't be trusted and that electors were going to get a special degree of power and influence over this process. As it's worked in practice, electors are not free agents, and almost nobody involved in the process thinks of them that way. Some states have passed laws to try to require people to vote the way the ballot goes in their state, but lawyers involved in election law tell me they think that those laws probably could not hold up in court.
Mm. Alan Dandapoff, how do you interpret this? I was interested reading your writing and also seeing what Michael Munger has said. Both of you seem to claim that your preferred path, that is, Electoral College as it is or not, leads more toward moderation in the way candidates address the voting public in the outcome of elections. Why do you think the Electoral College leads to more moderate winners?
It's because we have to take samples. In every state, you have to win states. States are samples of the vast electorate. And there's no statistical drift. I've often used the baseball analogy. If the World Series of 1960 had been based on raw score, the Yankees, who had 55 runs to 27
over the course of all the games,
over the course of all the games, certainly would have won, and the last game would not have even been contested. They would have had to lose by 28 runs, and that's the same thing that happens here. We don't want people in small states to see a giant plurality built up in California and New York void their votes. They have to be protected from that. The districting of states protects them. And it can be proved that individual votes are more potent under a districted system.
Michael Munger, I read or hear you making the opposite argument, that if we took away the winner-take-all formula, that would produce more moderate candidates and more moderate outcomes.
Well, and the reason that I think it's true, I don't disagree with the result that Alan is claiming mathematically. It's true. Like any mathematical theorem, it's true. The two claims that I would make is that the magnitude of the probability that he's talking about is very small. Like I said, yes, it's true that you have a bigger probability of influencing the outcome, but that means that a tall man is more likely than a short man to bump his head on the moon. The second thing is that if you weight these votes, the individual votes, by the entire amount instead of by just the difference. That is, in California, we have the full 53 that counts for each marginal vote. It matters more. But let me tell you the reason that I favor the Electoral College. California has 53 electoral votes. Wyoming has 3. So that's about 17 times as much electoral votes. But California has more than 50 times as much population. So it disproportionately serves the small states. It doesn't make up the difference, but it disproportionately serves them. I actually think that what Alan thinks is an advantage is a disadvantage. The reason that we saw allegations of corruption in Florida was that the winner-take-all system put so much pressure on individual counties and the counting procedure. If it had all come down to, we were only deciding about the difference rather than the entire amount, individual votes would not be as important. He thinks that individual votes should be important. I just disagree. I think that individual votes shouldn't be as important. What matters is your ability to appeal the entire population.
We're going to have to come back after a break and look at that. Alan Natapoff, Michael Munger, John Harwood in Washington, please stand by. We are talking tonight about America's Electoral College and Colorado's big new challenge to the whole system. November 2nd, folks in Colorado will not only vote for a candidate for president, they will vote for whether or not their electoral votes will continue to be divided winner-take-all or will be divided proportionately by the popular vote in that state. How do you see the overall impact of the Electoral College? Does it keep small states from being ignored? Does it frustrate the popular will? And what if the other 49 states followed the proposed Colorado reform, divided Electoral College votes proportionally? How would it change American politics? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's thorny relationship with the Electoral College and Colorado's new challenge to the system. You can join the conversation tonight. If the popular vote rules, will big states dominate the national debate? Does this old system still hold up, or is it time for a change? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joseph is calling from Boston. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you tonight?
Great. Thanks, Joseph.
Good. I'm a former elector from the Electoral College of 1992, and I just wanted to chime in a little bit about the concept of a faithless elector. And to me, that really is a primary reform that should be made in addition to the Colorado reform, which I favor.
Are you saying electors should be legally bound to vote as their state voters indicated?
Exactly. I'm not sure that a lot of people know that in the 2000 election, Al Gore really did not lose by 3 electoral votes. He lost by 4 because one of the electors from Washington, D.C. changed her mind. She despaired of his point of view on the lack of a District of Columbia vote for the United States Senate, and so she abstained from voting for him. And
that's taking an awful lot onto one person's shoulders after so many voters have voted.
And it's an important matter that's on each person's shoulders. In addition, in 1960, there were 11 such electors who had been voted in by for John Kennedy by the states of Mississippi and Louisiana. And they despaired of his pro-civil rights issues, points of view, and voted for United States Senator Harry Byrd from Virginia instead.
Joseph, let me ask
you.
It was
Alabama, by the way, instead of Louisiana.
Okay.
Alabama. Joseph, you've been an elector. You're hearing the debate tonight. What's your view? Should we stick with the Electoral College? Should we, like Colorado's now considering, treat it entirely differently?
I have 2 points. One is that I think that somehow we have to find a method of having the person who gets the most votes wins. It's the most important aspect of American democracy that the person or the presidential candidate with the most vote wins. But that's going to be a constitutional amendment, as many of your guests have said. I do favor the Colorado approach because it really grants to the state legislatures, that is the representative body in each state, to make the decision as the laboratories of democracy for a different and a halfway approach, and I like what Colorado's doing.
Joseph, thanks for your call. Now, I'm not sure, John Harwood, that that's exactly it. Forgive me if I'm wrong. Does the state legislator, would it come into play in Colorado, or is it simply taking the popular vote there and divvying up electoral votes on the basis of that?
Could I make a different point, Tom?
Well, sure.
It goes to a different way of reforming the system that might achieve the effect of making some voters feel like their vote is more consequential, but I think is potentially disastrous, and that is the idea of the nation adopting not the Colorado system but the Maine and Nebraska system that does it by congressional district.
That is remind us exactly how that works.
In Maine and Nebraska, the statewide winner gets the first two electoral votes, and the other votes go to the winner of each individual congressional district.
Okay, what's the problem?
Since either state has made this change, all the votes have gone in the same direction. The problem is, think about how contentious and bitter our fights over congressional redistricting have gotten in state legislatures and in the courts over the last few years. If you all of a sudden heap the pressure of a presidential election and knew that these boundaries might affect the presidential outcome, I think the system would fall apart.
And Michael Munger, what about our elector Joseph's point? He's saying, look, we just can't have a system where we come up with a president who didn't win the popular vote. As you pointed out, the founders had no problem with that, but these days it doesn't go down very well.
Well, it's no fair bringing in callers that actually know what they were talking about. I mean,
it happens from time to time.
I thought the points that he made were interesting. What I understood him to say about the laboratories of democracy was leaving up to Colorado and the other state legislatures how they want to apportion the way the votes are divided. I think that John Harwood, though, has put his finger on something really important. It seems like these two systems, that is the Maine and Nebraska system and then the fully proportional system, are in some way similar. They're not. And the idea that you're going to split it up into these gerrymandered districts, it's a nonpartisan point, but our congressional districts are so gerrymandered that they bear little relation to having a one-person, one-vote kind of system.
It's hard to see that really gaining a lot of popular support because so many people know how gerrymandered that is. But can you see if Colorado votes for this? And as even the governor who opposes it pointed out right now, the polls show it's tending toward this outcome of this reform. Can you see that catching on like a prairie fire in other states, Michael Munger?
I think I can, and I think that people would say this is a half step towards getting rid of the Electoral College completely. I actually think that this is just an improvement on the Electoral College, that this is a way of making it better but keeping the essential feature that you get the number of congressional districts, which is proportional to population, and then you add the two senators, and that means that the small states get disproportionately more power. So I actually think that this is an improvement on the existing system. It's not a way of partially getting rid of the Electoral College.
Hans is calling from Oregon, Wisconsin. Hi, Hans. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Yeah.
My comment is this. I favor getting rid of the popular vote entirely, and I'll give you two reasons
okay.
why. The first is that it would get rid of all this nonsense we call a presidential election. It's tons of money spent in a very shallow conversation.
Bunch of daggone hullabaloo. No point, huh?
Yeah. The second is this. I think about control systems. I'm a mechanical engineer. And control systems tend to have better responses when there are different derivatives involved. So if you think about, say, the president was maybe elected by Congress, then the way our government would work is referendums are direct democracy. Then we have representative government through representatives and senators. And then, which is the first derivative.
Okay.
Then we have the president, would be the second derivative. And then we'd have important positions in the judicial branch, which are the third derivative. And I think the early concern of our founders about demagoguery is very applicable. And by removing the president from the people through a couple derivatives, it would buffer things out much more.
Hans, we've got it, and thanks for your call. We've got an astrophysicist bringing out a mechanical engineer here. Alan Nadipoff, do you agree with any of this impulse? I mean, this takes it way further. It says, hey, let's just let the college, or in this case, the congressman, sort it out. Can you imagine that?
Very much against it. I'd like to answer what Michael said. He has some interesting points. Tall man to the moon. Our lab does work with respect to the moon. I should say that if you look at Florida in 2000, it doesn't the moon is not that far away.
We bumped our head.
We definitely bumped our head. Everybody was surprised at the power we have. It's part of the mathematics, and it is true, and it's essential. Second, no one knows what the popular will is until we decide by law, and we shouldn't decide by raw vote. The third thing is...
Why not again? You're saying not by raw vote?
No, because raw vote takes everybody's vote away. It gives the voting power to blocks, not individuals. At first, and it's been said several times, that small states get disproportionate power. They get disproportionate weight, but they do not get disproportionate power. The weight
What's
is too
the difference?
Small. The weight is...
Too small? Are you kidding me?
I mean, I am not kidding.
Well, it can decide a presidential election, as you say. Tall man hits his head on the moon. It can happen.
Yeah. Well, this is what happened.
That sounds like power.
Tell me this. In 2000, the 54 electoral votes of California, I'd like to know what make weight the small states would have, of the same number of electoral votes, would have contributed. The answer is if you take the lowest, smallest states, take 54 electoral votes, they had a net effect of 10. Or perhaps one, depending on how you count.
Still doesn't stack up to California's swing.
Not nearly, and we don't expect it to. The mathematics says that it doesn't.
John Harwood.
One point about the caller who was talking about how lousy campaigns are. I think it's worth pointing out Pew Research Center, very well-respected polling organization in Washington, came out with a very large national sample today, showed most voters tend to think this campaign is pretty good. They can see clear differences between the candidates. So there are a lot of voters, even though a lot of us are cynical about the way campaigns are run, a lot of voters think this is working the way it ought to.
John, if I got the headline right on that, that same survey and maybe another one today also indicated that President Bush's post-convention bounce may have evaporated.
It's definitely narrowing. What we're seeing is that the further we get away from that convention, the closer some of these results are showing.
Can you imagine this election coming down this time to Colorado, where they actually tinker with the system as they cast their vote, and that making the difference?
I wouldn't bet on it, but it's not impossible.
Wow, what a picture. And John Harwood, one final thing. If American politics went to a popular vote, just as a thought exercise, you say, look, that's not going to happen. But if it did, how do you think it would change the tenor, the complexion of American presidential politics?
I think you'd have candidates campaigning more in population centers, major metropolitan areas, than they do now. Republicans would have an interest in spending time in California to try to cut into Democratic margins there.
In South Dakota would never see their toes again?
Yeah, I think the small states, which a lot of them are very Republican as they are now and don't get a lot of attention because Republicans take them for granted and Democrats don't waste their time. But I do think in states like Florida, Texas, California, and New York, you'd see an inordinate amount of attention to these major metro areas and their suburbs.
Well, it's been a fascinating hour. Michael Munger, last word goes to you. You'd like to see reform. There's a little bit on the plate in Colorado. Do you see it happening? Do you see it coming?
I think there's a chance that a lot of state legislators are going to look at it very seriously. I think that they'll end up, their attention will go elsewhere because the issues are just too arcane.
And the Electoral College concurs with with that very arcane character. Michael Munger at Duke in North Carolina, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
And Alan Natapoff at MIT, right here with me in the studio. Thanks so much for coming in. Great to have you. And John Harwood in Washington, political editor for The Wall Street Journal. Wonderful, as always, to have you. And thanks for your reporting on this one.
Anytime.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. In a moment, one Georgia resident's vision for a new America. This is On Point. A poll out this week from the Annenberg Public Policy Center shows that a majority of Americans think the country is, quote, seriously off on the wrong track. Georgia resident Bill Ferguson shares that view, but he doesn't think that either of the candidates for president is willing to really change the country's course anytime soon. In this radio diary, Bill Ferguson says maybe it's time for the country to consider starting over.
Presidential election years are a catalyst for citizens to take stock of the state of their nation, to get a feel for how things are going and where the country is headed. I get the impression that many of us are feeling rather pessimistic about the road we are currently on, and many of us who are not rabid devotees of either of the two major parties aren't optimistic that either Bush or Kerry has the wherewithal to turn things around. We have serious economic problems that we seem content to ignore until they reach crisis proportions. Public morality seems to have become a quaint and passé concept. And we seem to have more enemies and fewer friends in the rest of the world than at any time in our history. It's hard to face this possibility, but history shows us that every great civilization eventually reaches its zenith and then slides into a period of decline. And it seems possible that our best days as a nation are already behind us. I'd like to think that all of our problems are fixable, but it's difficult to remain optimistic. I am beginning to think that this country may have become too large and unwieldy to govern, and that the electorate lacks the will and discernment to choose qualified leaders and demand that they legislate effectively. My frustration has reached such a level that I'm becoming more and more sympathetic to the idea of a separatist movement. Maybe it's time for those of us who don't believe that our government is capable of pulling this plane out of its nosedive to consider the possibility of banding together and declaring ourselves a free and independent nation. I realize that this is not a new concept. I also realize that history would not be on our side. No one has to remind me how the Civil War turned out, or of what happens to people like David Koresh who declare their personal independence from the authority of the U.S. government. Situations like that always end badly, because no one can outgun Uncle Sam. The key to success would be to seize the moral high ground, to resist violence with peace and intolerance with kindness. In the long run, the methods of Gandhi and Martin Luther King are much more effective than the way of the gun and the bomb. There's a reason why India achieved its independence from Britain and apartheid was overthrown in South Africa, while the Palestinians still clamor for their homeland. I'm not quite ready to move to Montana yet, but the idea that at some point the only way to salvage some kernel of the idealism that birthed this nation will be to start a new country seems a little less outlandish with each passing day. I think I'll start working on some flag designs, just in case.
Bill Ferguson is a columnist with the Macon Telegraph. He lives in Centerville, Georgia. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Jane Manners, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Rachel Dornhelm and Lauren Matalon. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.